Silence reigns after the dragons disappear into the horizon.
What the fuck just happened?
The words open a floodgate of emotion. Astonishment, joy, despair, anger, fear, resolution. I think we all run the gamut as we stare at one another with wide and wild eyes. Hudson collapses on the ground next to his brother, arm braced on Jackson's shoulder as he keeps staring at him like he can't believe he's real. Jackson blinks at his brother.
My soul. I can feel my soul again.
As I watch Hudson pull Jackson into his arms, a few tiny pieces of my broken heart start to mend themselves together. Because this is how Jackson and Hudson should have always been. How they would have been had their parents in a grotesque promise not ripped them apart all those years ago. With Mackay's help, Flint manages to stand, then hobbles over to Luca's lifeless body. Macy and Eden hold each other, faces pale with the ordeal we've all suffered through, while Liam, Raphael, and Byron don't seem to know how to feel any more than they know what to do. They end up moving back and forth between Jackson and Luca, who I never even had the chance to try to save. As for me, I stay exactly where I am, on the ground between them all.
What does it mean for a vampire to have a dragon heart?
I don't know. What does it mean to have a dragon queen who's given away her dragon?
Macy shakes her head. Flint kneels down beside Luca, jaw locked and eyes broken as he pulls Mackay's hoodie down enough to see his boyfriend's face.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
It hurts worse when I remember the way he and Hudson were teasing each other just the other day, and the promises he made about what was going to happen when he saw Luca again. Jackson pushes to his feet. He's still a little wobbly, but Hudson reaches out to steady him.
We need to take him home.
Jackson walks over and squats down next to Flint, his hand heavy on the dragon's back as he reaches out and takes Luca's hand for the last time. He turns to Flint, still holding Luca's hand.
It's time to let him go. You've got to let him go.
Flint nods even as his shoulders begin to shake. As he lets go of Luca, he seems to collapse in on himself, but Jackson is right there, holding him up. Flint wraps himself around Jackson, burying his head against his shoulder. Jackson holds him through it, deep pain etched on his own face, for Flint and for Luca. Tears roll down my own cheeks. I didn't know I could cry this much, and Hudson finds me. Of course he does. He pulls me up from the floor, wraps his arms around me, and holds me as I try to find the energy to keep going. He's drained himself, his energy left on the field of battle. But somehow just holding each other, my arms wrapped around his middle as his lips skim across my hair, makes us both feel a little bit better.
We need to take him home.
Flint nods, jaw working but eyes finally dry. The order moves in to pick up the body. Seconds later, they've faded away. Only then does Flint grab Jackson and me in a hug.
Thank you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you.
I don't say anything back. There's nothing to say at a time like this except what's already been said. So I hug them both as tightly as I can. Then Jackson and I step back as Flint shifts, his dragon form much better at balancing his missing leg than his human form is yet. And then he takes to the air to help the Order bring Luca home. When they're gone, Jackson, Hudson, Macy, Eden, and me all kind of collapse, the emotions of the last few hours catching up with us. I don't know how long we sit there. Long enough for my hands to finally stop shaking. Long enough for my shoulders and my soul to finally relax just a little. More than long enough for Hudson to pull me into his lap and hold me like I'm the most precious thing in his world. Eventually, though, I'm ready to do what we came here to do. Push myself to my feet. I hold up the key I've managed to hang on to through everything. I think it's time.
Damn straight.
Eden hops to her feet right alongside me.
Let's go get this crown and shove it up Cyrus's ass.
I can totally get behind that.
Macy holds out a hand so I can pull her to her feet. Jackson and Hudson nod too, and then the five of us make our way along the rocky edge until we get to the entrance that leads us to the unkillable beast. The cave is exactly as I remember it, circular in shape with a giant rocky wall against the back. As we get closer, the wall starts to move like it did last time, and the beast slowly lowers himself to his feet. He's even bigger than last time, his shoulders wider, his chest broader. but his face looks the same, sad and a little macabre at the same time. I hear him in my head like I have for so many months. I walk slowly but steadily toward him. It's okay. I came back to free you, just like I promised.
Free?
I take the key from my pocket to show him.
Free, 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 free.
There are four cuffs, two for his wrists and two for his ankles. And after I undo the bottom two, I grab my platinum string and shift, flying up so I can unlock his arm cuffs as well. As the last one falls away, I fly down and land and the beast throws back his head. The roar bounces off the rocky walls and echoing throughout the cavern for several seconds. And then he shifts, and a man is standing in front of me dressed in a royal blue tunic, gold leggings with laces, and a gold and royal blue cloak tied over one shoulder and fastened with a large sapphire brooch. He's tall, with smoke gray eyes and blonde hair fastened into a braid. He's also got a short, pointed goatee and seems to be in his late 30s. I shift back, but don't try to approach him. Are you all right? This man has suffered so much and who, in his own way, has helped me through so many of my own troubles. He looks at me like he doesn't understand what I'm saying, but eventually it must sink in.
Thank you.
I approach him slowly, but he shrinks away from me. And I get it. It's been 1,000 years since he's been human, and the last people he saw did this to him. Just one more atrocity Cyrus has to answer for. It's okay. I'm a friend. He stops, tilting his head like that last word gets through to him. Friend. I'm a friend. He studies me for a while.
Friend?
I smile at him, then glance at Macy, about to ask if she brought some of the granola bars I practically live on when we go on trips like this. She's already walking forward, a bottle of water in one hand and a pack of cookies in the other. He won't touch them when she offers them to him, so I take them and try. I even open the bottle of water and take a sip to show him that it's okay. His eyes follow the water bottle like a starving man, and this time when I hand it to him, he practically snatches it away from me. He drinks it down in a few long swallows. By the time he's done, Macy has another one for him. After he's had his fill of water and cookies, he bows toward Macy and me both.
Thank you.
Which means it's time to ask him about what I came here for all along. Crown? He looks confused, this poor man who is more instinct than human at this point, who understands bare necessities like food and water more than he understands anything else. Do you know how to find the crown? I hold my hands right above my head, mimicking the act of putting on a crown. The confusion only grows worse.
No crown, no crown, no crown.
It's not the answer any of us is expecting, and I glance back to see worry on Hudson's and Jackson's faces, because if he doesn't have the crown, where is it? And does that mean Cyrus can find it first?
Her crown, her, must give crown to her, must protect crown, her.
Who is her, and why does she need to be protected if she's already got the crown? It's okay. I step closer so I can put a soothing hand on his shoulder. He freezes at my touch and I realize, like with the water, this is the first real human contact this poor man has had in more than a millennia. The knowledge hits me deep inside. I pat his shoulder. I will protect her. If you tell me who she is, I will protect her. His eyes narrow and he looks at me, half hopeful and half suspicious.
You will protect her?
I will. If you tell me how to get the crown, I will give it to her as soon as I save my friends. He's trying to assess me through the jumbled mess of his mind.
You give her crown?
After I save my friends, yes. But do you know where it is? He nods quickly.
You promise, give her crown, protect her. Agree?
I have no idea who her is, but if it gets me the crown, I'm totally willing to try to figure it out. It's not like I want the crown longer than it takes to defeat Cyrus. But before I can agree, Hudson makes his way closer.
Be careful what you promise, Grace. It's not the same in our world. What if her is Delilah? Or someone worse?
He's right. What if I promise this crown to the Vampire Queen or the Crone or someone equally as horrible who I don't even know exists yet? And so I turn back to the man. Who is her? But he just shakes his head.
Crown, give her crown.
give her crown. Give her crown, give her.
I don't know what to do. Don't know what to say to get him to trust me with the whereabouts of the crown or the identity of her. He's growing frustrated, and this time he says something important.
Give mate crown.
I whirl around to look at Hudson, and he has the same thunderstruck expression on his face that I have.
She's your mate? You want your mate to have the crown?
He nods.
You want to protect your mate?
He nods again. And I'm reminded of Falia and Vander, both of whom had to go 1,000 years without their mates. It devastated them. And I wonder what must have happened to this poor man's mate all these years. He was frozen in stone. But if she's still alive, she's suffered through all the agony of not having a mate, completely alone, unable to even communicate the most basic things to him. I glance at Hudson again as something else occurs to me. If he has a mate, does that mean there's another gargoyle out there somewhere? That maybe the two of us aren't the only ones in existence? I mean, yeah, he could be mated to someone non-gargoyle, look at Hudson and me, but there's a chance she's a gargoyle. And that is the most wonderful and amazing thing I've heard in a really long time. Hudson must feel my excitement, because he nods at me and even grins a little. I love that he reads me so easily, and that, despite the bickering, we're so often on the same page when it really matters. And so I turn back to the man.
Yes. If you give me the crown to save my friends, afterward, I promise to search for your mate and give it to her.
For the longest time, he doesn't move. He just studies me with eyes that grow older with every second that passes. Eyes that seem to hold eternity in their pewter gray depths. I'm about to ask if he's okay, but then he grabs my hand.
Agree?
His palm slides against mine, and then he takes off running toward the entrance of the cave.
What the?
Jackson tries to race after him.
Wait! Let him go. It's okay. There's nowhere to run, and we can chase after him in a minute.
But the crown!
He gave me something. My palm is suddenly burning and itching. I turn it over, and tattooed right in the center of my hand, taking up almost my entire palm, is a series of 7 concentric circles in the shape of a wreath, or a crown. I hold up my hand for my friends to see, and as they all crowd around...
What?
Now what?
Ready to go home? Macy prepares to open one last portal. Grace turns to me, and the wind is blowing her curls across her face, so it takes me a few seconds to realize she's been crying. Hey, I pull her into my chest, and she comes, which, honestly, feels a little like a miracle in and of itself in a morning that's been full of miracles already. You okay? She nods, even as she buries her head against me. Does it still hurt? I take her hand, gently turning it over so that I can see the crown emblazoned there. It's glowing, eerily, something her other tattoo only does when it's actively channeling magic, which makes me wonder all kinds of things about this one. None of them good.
It's not too bad. More annoying than anything else. Not
like the rest of the day? Which has hurt like hell?
Something like that, yeah.
Macy's almost got the portal ready. I nod, to where Macy and Eden are laying stones on the beach.
Good. If I never see this place again, it'll be too soon.
I know what she means. First Xavier, then Luca. Yeah, we managed to hang on to Jackson and Flint, but only because of miracles. I'm beginning to think this island is cursed.
Or we are.
She looks down at her palm.
What am I supposed to do with this thing?
We'll figure it out. Maybe Foster or Amka have some ideas about it. And if they don't, we'll find someone who does.
Someone who won't chop off my hand just to try to possess it for themselves?
She lifts a brow. Good point. Well, surely there's someone who can... She looks back toward the area that used to house the hot springs, and trees, and beautiful rock formations. An area that is now mostly dust. Because of me. I try not to panic as she stares at it for several silent seconds. I've spent the last hour waiting for the other shoe to drop. For her to realize that she doesn't love me after all. Or worse, that she doesn't love me enough to stand up to her feelings for Jackson. Feelings she couldn't help but realize, as he lay dying right in front of her. I wouldn't even blame her. Those moments when Jackson was dead, I would have done anything to take his place again. Anything for it not to have been my brother lying there, cold and lifeless. Anything, that is, but give up Grace. Maybe she had the same thought about me, without the caveat. But then she turns to me and smiles, and it takes my breath away all over again. And when she joins her non-tattooed hand with mine, hope trembles inside me like a bird just beginning to stretch its wings.
I love you. I think I've always loved you.
And just like that, the bird takes flight. Still, I don't throw myself at her feet and gush the way I'm desperate to. A man needs some dignity, after all. Instead, I smile. I know. It's a brief kiss. Soft and sweet and perfect. But she pulls away after only a few seconds.
Are you always going to say that?
If it's good enough for the movie.
Then it's good enough for us.
Something like that. I pull her into my arms one more time, just because I can. She melts against me, and I say what's been burning inside me for nearly 6 long months. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. This time, she kisses me. We don't pull away until we're breathless, our lips swollen and our bodies gasping for air. I love you. I slide a finger over her ring. The promise I made to her before I ever had a clue that we were going to end up here.
I know.
She smiles, before holding her hand up between us.
So are you ever going to tell me what you promised me with this beautiful ring I'm never taking off?
My chest feels tight in all the best ways at the idea of Grace wearing my ring for an eternity. I think about telling her. It's not that I'm worried she'll freak out. I know now that she loves me and she isn't going anywhere. But still, I gave her this ring before I'd ever told her I loved her. Before I'd ever even kissed her. Maybe she needs a little more time to get used to us before I tell her what I promised her, before we were even an official couple. I'll tell you, if you guess it correctly. She narrows her eyes at me.
That doesn't exactly seem fair.
Well, I thought you'd figured it out by now, that I don't play fair.
Big bad Hudson Vega.
I don't know about bad. As for big.
I think you promised to never let your ego get in the way. Oh, wait. Too late for that.
Next guess?
How about you promised to never leave the toilet seat up? Which I would really appreciate, by the way.
If there's one thing I can say about Grace, it's that eternity will never be boring with her. Lucky, lucky me. We're going to live a very long time, Grace. I can't be making rash promises like that.
Okay, then how about...
Let's go, lovebirds. Get the lead out. I got places to be.
Dragons always think the world revolves around them.
She starts pulling me up the beach, to where Macy and her portal await. On the way, we catch up to the other gargoyle, who hasn't spoken another word to us after he gave Grace the crown. Part of me expected him to run somewhere we couldn't find him after we freed him. But he has been chained up for 1,000 years. It's hard to imagine there was anywhere he'd really want to go. And since there's no way Grace is going to leave him here on this island alone, she doesn't have it in her to abandon anyone. He's making the trip back to Katmere too. At least, I think he is. He didn't say anything, but he nodded when she asked if he wanted to come with us. Macy's grin is fierce as we approach the spinning portal, and so is Jackson's.
Don't rush on our account.
Believe me, we won't. But I'm smiling just as big, because he's not dead, and neither is his soul, thanks to Nuri. Despite everything, I owe her a debt I can never repay.
Ladies first.
Jackson waves Grace toward the portal. She elbows him a little on her way, but then turns and blows me a kiss, before diving headfirst into it. and she wonders why she never lands on her feet on the other side. I make a mental note to give her a heads up on the problem as I wait for Eden, the gargoyle, and Jackson to go through. Macy, you got everything you need to follow us through?
Yep, I'll be right behind you.
Then, I step into the portal. After about a minute, the portal ends, and I step through, expecting to find Grace and the others waiting for me. Instead, they're racing toward the school like the hounds of hell are after them. And maybe they are, considering the forest all around me is burning. Macy tumbles onto the ground behind me, and she gets her first look at the devastation burning around us.
What's happening?
I don't have a fucking clue. I pick her up and throw her on my back before fading straight for Katmir's gates. Jackson is already inside, but I get there just as Grace and Eden land.
What's going on?
Eden slides the other gargoyle onto the floor, then shifts back to her human form.
I don't know.
The gargoyle settles on the entry steps, and the four of us race up the stairs. We burst through the front doors into the hall. We can see that the common room on the first floor is completely wrecked. Couches are ripped to hell and back, chairs and tables smashed, everything in pieces. Jackson races back into the room, a wild look in his eyes.
Where's my dad?
Gone. Everyone's gone.
You mean the students? Maybe they went home for break.
They don't go home. Not in mass. Only the seniors leave.
Macy starts running down the hall.
Dad! Dad!
Grace heads after her cousin, but Jackson and I exchange a look before racing toward the stairs at a dead fade. We make it to the fourth floor at the same time. He turns left and I turn right, but it takes less than a minute for me to make it down the dorm hallway and back. The doors are all broken or hanging off the hinges, and there's no one around. No one.
They're gone. They're all gone.
Yeah. He shoves a hand through his hair.
What the fuck happened? Macy talked to her dad a few hours ago and everything was fine.
A terrifying scenario is playing itself out in my head. What if everything that just happened was the distraction? Jackson's eyes narrow as he looks around.
But what is this supposed to be distracting us from?
No, not this. I meant on the island, with the crown. I wondered why the wolves never joined the fight until the very end. And now I think we know why. What if the island was the distraction, and this? I look around at the claw marks in the walls, the broken lights, and torn up banisters.
This was the main event?
I get what he's thinking. People died on that island today. A lot of people. Jackson himself is only alive because Nuri sacrificed her dragon for him. For that kind of carnage, that loss of life, to be nothing more than a distraction. Eden comes racing up the stairs.
We found Marissa. Grace and Macy are with her in the infirmary. She's the only one we've found so far.
I take off, jumping down the stairs and landing on the foyer floor. I'm about to fade to the infirmary when the front door bursts open again. I whirl, prepared to fight, but it's just the order and Flint finally arriving.
What the fuck?
They lay Luca's body on the floor and cover him with a fallen blanket.
What happened here?
Where is everyone?
We're about to find out. Marissa's in the infirmary. We fade to the infirmary, where we find more destruction. Grace and Macy have turned one of the beds back over and have Marissa on it, but the vampire looks weaker than I've ever seen her.
It was Cyrus.
That's impossible. You were just fighting him.
His troops with an army of wolves. They stormed the school, took all the students and teachers. Exactly as we feared.
You mean we're it?
And I get what she's thinking. There are 10 of us. 11, if you count Marissa. Against all of Cyrus's considerable forces. Yes, we have the crown, but that's all we have. How the fuck are we going to fix this?
This is an act of war.
Mackay had faded here with Flint, but now he's leaning against a wall, his weight on his only good leg.
Second act of war today.
They're right. Rage boils inside me, but I tamp it down. Try to think through this whole fucked up mess. No wonder he wanted Grace, Flint, and me in prison. No wonder he had everyone challenging us for the last few weeks, knocking the shit out of us, getting us grounded. Of course, this was his endgame all along. Just as they feared. Kidnap the kids of the most prominent members of the circle. Hold them until you get what you want. Total and absolute control of everything. And who's going to fight you? The parents whose kids you're holding hostage? I don't think so. I look around at our friends, all of whom look like they've been to hell and back. If he wants a war, then we'll bloody well give him a war.
With 11 of us?
With 11 of us.
We've beaten bad odds before.
There are bad odds, and then there's everyone's gonna die odds.
Well, maybe that's true. But dear old Dad miscalculated this time.
And how's that exactly?
He didn't kill us on that island. And now, we're coming for him.
So what? We're just going to bring this fight to him?
We're gonna bring it to his motherfucking door. And then we're gonna burn his shit to the ground.
You need her.
I turn at the tremulous voice to find the guy who used to be the unkillable beast staring at us with anxious eyes.
She can save us. You need her.
Who?
She can save us.
Who?
He points to Grace's hand.
Her. Her.
And then he turns to stone. And, not going to lie, didn't see that coming. Just great. As everyone mills around, trying to figure out who her is, and if there's another gargoyle around, I can't help thinking that I need to talk to Grace. Because if this is going the way I think it is, which is straight to hell, it's probably time I tell her what I saw that night in the laundry room all those weeks ago. I think it's time I tell her about her emerald green string. We had just returned to Katmere from visiting the Crone, and all I wanted was to wrap my arms around Grace and carry her to my room. And then, all hell breaks loose.
Don't you fucking touch her! This is all your fault. You and your mating bond are the reason she might die in prison, and you think you've got the right to put your filthy fucking hands on her?
Whoa, Jackson.
Mackay tries to put a restraining palm on his shoulder, but Jackson shoves it off as he gets right up in my face. We exchange some words, and I try to brush past him. But out of nowhere... the boy always was a drama queen. We take a few swings at each other before Grace and everyone else are able to calm things down. Mackay, Luca, Eden, and Flint jump on Jackson, while Grace turns to me.
Stop!
You need to back off.
There's a lot more talking, a lot more horrible news about mating bonds and losing souls to wade through, but I barely listen to any of it, because there's nothing more to say that matters. Nothing more to say that will change anything. There's no way either Grace or I could live with ourselves if we let Jackson lose his soul. No way we could ever be together if we knew that doing so meant destroying Jackson forever. Not when we both love him as much as we do, and not when we've both sacrificed so much for him already. Grace turns around to meet my gaze, but I already know. I've known from the moment the words left Jackson's mouth. So when she mouths, "I'm sorry," it doesn't even hit. How could it, when the body blow came 5 minutes ago? And so I do the only thing I can. I leave. There's no place to go. No one to be with. The closest people I have to friends are in the foyer, comforting my brother. Which is how it should be. But my night has taken quite a turn from where I thought it was going to go. So it's not like I've got anything to keep my mind busy as I sit in my room. I asked Grace to come back here with me earlier because I'd wanted to be with her. But I also did it because I wanted to see what she'd say. I wanted to know if what happened in New York mattered to her as much as it did to me, or if it was just something that stayed there. When she said yes, I don't think I've ever been happier in my life. And now, half an hour later, it's gone completely to hell, and all I have to show for it is a bruised throat and a long, mateless existence. Fate really is a fickle, fickle bitch. But what's the alternative? The truth is, there is none, and there never has been, despite the hope that's beaten like feathered wings deep inside me for months now. Grace and Jackson belong together. Even if the universe hasn't decreed it, the blood letter and some dark magic has. There's no getting around that now. Maybe there never was. I was just too naive to realize it. In my room, there's nothing to do. Graduation is tomorrow, so there's no schoolwork, no late-night study session, no one to talk to. And though I've spent my life alone, after these last few weeks with Grace and the others, solitude suddenly feels like punishment. The silence gets to me. I resist the urge to check my phone to see if Grace has texted me. It's harder than it should be. It's okay, I tell myself. Everything's fine. It wouldn't have worked anyway. I'm all right. Everything is all right. Convinced I've got my shit under control, I pick up the book lying next to me on the couch, the one I was reading before we went to the Dragon Court. I open it to the page I bookmarked and start to read. I even make it through two pages before I realize what I'm reading. It takes a while until the words swimming before my eyes finally register. And that's when I do the only thing yet another tosser who throws away his mating bond can do. I go to the front of the book and rip out the first page of Pablo Neruda's 20 Love Poems and a Song of Despair, the same book I gave to Grace on her birthday, and toss it into the fire. I do the same with the second page, and the third, and the fourth, and the fifth, and the sixth. After page 10, I just throw the rest of the book in the fire. And I'm still not okay. More, I'm pretty sure I never will be again. This is a bad idea. A very bad idea. But since the alternative is staring at the ceiling in my room and pretending to be asleep while the clock moves at a snail's pace, I figure a bad idea is better than no idea at all. I have on my running shoes and a hoodie, and I'm currently to my baby brother's tower, because apparently he needs one to feel like a prince. I figure he'll be asleep, but catching him with his defenses down might not be a bad thing. But Jackson must not be getting any more sleep than I do these days, because when I get to his room, he's not in bed. Instead, he's lying on a weight bench in the center of the room, bench pressing a truly impressive amount of weight while some band blasts from his phone.
What do you want?
Quality time. His only response is a roll of his eyes as he lifts and lowers the weights. So, if quality time isn't on the table, I thought maybe you'd like to join me for a run. I know it's a strange invitation. Our entire relationship is off, and has been for a very long time. But I figure if one of us doesn't try to take a step, whatever fucked up shit this is between us will go on for another century or 10. And I don't want that. Especially not with what's coming our way. And especially not when Jackson's been so fucking decent about Grace lately. Something that's hard to believe, but definitely appreciated on my part. A long silence follows my invitation. Too long, if you ask me. But eventually, Jackson raises a sardonic brow and asks,
What? Are we bonding now?
Bonding seems a little extreme. I thought we'd start with talking and running. Preferably at the same time, if you think you can handle it. It's a deliberate goad. One that must hit its mark, because the next thing I know, J Jackson is off the bench and walking toward his bedroom.
Let me grab my shoes. Then you can tell me what this visit is actually about.
Oh, I don't know. How about the fact that we've been at each other's throats for more than a century, and I don't even know why? Besides the whole born vampire supremacy misunderstanding nightmare, and the him killing me nightmare, and the mated to and in love with the same girl nightmare. Jesus, is it any wonder our relationship is so completely fucked? The deck's been stacked against us from the very beginning. Except I remember when it wasn't. Probably a lot better than Jackson does. I remember when we were little and used to play hide and seek all over the vampire court. It used to make Cyrus so pissed, especially when Jackson would use his powers to flush me out of hiding. At least a quarter of the fun of the game was seeing how mad our father would get when Jackson's earthquakes disrupted his meetings. But Cyrus was already locking me up at that point, pushing me into losing my temper so he could test my powers, and any payback I could deliver was totally worth it to me. Except when they took Jackson away, nothing was worth that. I didn't get to see him for more than 100 years. No matter how much I pleaded or how much my father used him as a carrot to dangle over my head to get me to do things I didn't want to do. At least it didn't take long to figure out that it didn't matter how well I controlled my powers or how well I performed in whatever destructive task he set for me. I would never get to see Jackson. I don't want that to happen again. And with graduation looming, I definitely don't want to go another 100 years without seeing my baby brother. I walk around his room and try to find something I can pretend to look at to keep myself busy. To be fair, there isn't much. He's taken everything out of the sitting room since the last time I was up here, until the only things left are the weightlifting equipment and a couple of stray books stacked on the windowsill, next to a small, carved horse. It's not even a surprise. I saw it the last time I was here, but I end up stiffening anyway, because I don't know how I feel about the fact that he still has it. And he probably has no idea why it matters. I start to turn away, but in the end, I can't resist picking it up. I spent days carving it for him when we were kids, and while it's not a perfect model of his own horse, it's pretty good. Even the mane and tail look about right. I can't help being impressed with young Hudson's skills. I hold it up to get a better look at the defined swirls in the mane and tail. Huh. Yeah, not too shabby at all. Jackson comes back from his bedroom. A bigger scowl than usual flits across his face.
Why are you touching that?
Why do you care? I put the horse back down gently as he just walks out the door. He doesn't say anything until we get outside.
Where do you want to run?
Down the other side of Denali? Near the resorts?
Sure.
He takes off at a full-on fade. Not quite what I had in mind. I catch up to him, and we fade alongside each other for a while. But it's not exactly conducive to talking. He finally slows down for a second at the bottom of the mountain, and I stop, determined to have my say before he takes off again.
Hey!
I grab his arm. Jackson turns around with his fist clenched, and for a second, I think he's going to punch me. Instead of fighting back, I decide to let him. But the swing never comes. He drops his fist, shakes his head.
What are we doing here, Hudson?
My skin starts to feel too tight.
I thought we were running.
Not what I mean. You know it.
He walks a little bit away, leans against the trunk of one of the big trees that fill up so much of the wilderness around here. I do know. I stare off into the distance. I wanted to say thank you.
For Grace? You don't thank me for that. The mate thing was all her.
I'm not thanking you for the fact that she's my mate. I'm thanking you for...
What?
Suddenly, my baby brother looks tired. Really, really tired.
For what you did the other night.
He shrugs, jaw working.
It didn't mean anything.
It meant everything. To me and I think, to Grace. You didn't have to do that.
Yeah, I did. Watching Grace walk around like a whipped puppy may not bother you, but I couldn't take it anymore.
It's bait, no doubt about it. And I know he threw it out there like that just to see if I would take it. But even knowing that, it's hard to walk away when I've spent weeks trying to get out of their way, despite Grace's and my bond. Still, I manage it. That's fair.
That's fair.
His black eyes are narrowed dangerously.
Nothing about this is fair, Hudson. You'd know that if you weren't so busy being magnanimous.
Is that what you think I'm doing?
Isn't it?
Not even a little bit. I'm trying. Ugh. It's not easy to talk to him at the best of times. Right now, when he's determined to mess everything up, he's impossible.
What?
But I don't answer him. I can't. Instead, I just shake my head and turn back towards school. I knew going in that this was a bad idea. I just hadn't realized how bad.
Oh, so you're just gonna walk away? You get me out here and now you're just gonna walk away without telling me what you want? Real mature, Hudson.
I want my brother back!
Something inside me snaps, and he freezes.
What did you say?
You asked what I wanted. That's what I want. I want my brother back. I miss him. I miss you.
It's hard to miss what you've never had.
Is that what you think? That we've never had a relationship?
We didn't.
He sounds so sure.
I got shipped to the Bloodletter when I was young. You stayed at home with dear old mom and dad, and that was that. We're just two strangers who happen to share the same blood. It doesn't mean shit.
Something breaks inside me. Something I didn't even know was there. You don't really believe that.
I do believe it. It's not our fault. Just is what it is. Trying to change it after nearly two centuries. There's no point. Especially now.
The point is you're my brother.
So what? It's not like our family tree means shit to either of us. There's nothing I got from either of them, from any of you, that I want to keep.
The words hit like actual punches, and I can't stop myself.
But then why do you keep it? If you want nothing to do with any of us, why do you keep it?
Keep what?
The horse. I made it for you more than 150 years ago, and I gave it to you the day Delilah took you away. If we're two people who just share the same blood, if family doesn't mean anything, why do you still have it?
You made it?
Yeah. I still have the scar to prove it. I show him a small, wicked-looking hook across my left index finger. Where did you think it came from?
I don't know. It's just always been there.
He slowly realizes what he's saying. You were crying the day they took you away. The only thing that made you stop was that damn horse. Thunder. I'm sorry. I never meant to hurt you. I never meant for any of this to happen.
I know.
He looks down, shuffles his feet.
And I'm sorry I killed you. It was a shit move.
That's one hell of a thing to apologize to someone for.
You think they make Hallmark cards for that?
For long minutes, we do nothing but stand there in the middle of the wilderness and laugh. We don't stop until an alarm goes off on Jackson's phone.
Okay, I need to go. I'm helping Grace study for history in the morning.
Those words would have stung an hour ago. Hell, they would have stung 15 minutes ago. But now, I don't know. They seem, if not right, then at least okay. Kind of like Jackson and me. We're not right yet. We may never be right. But we're better than we were. And maybe that's enough. For now. Maybe it's a start. I can't help grinning at the thought.
Race you back?
Sure. And as we take off, fading back up Denali, I can't help thinking that sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes the family you're born with and the family you make coincide. And that makes all the difference.
Crave, Book 3, Covet, Part 2 of 2, by Tracy Wolfe, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2021 by Tracy Wolfe. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2024, Graphic Audio, LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Stuart Crank and Melody Muse. With performances by Yenny Ann as Macy, Wynn Delano as Jackson, Stuart Crank as Hudson, Anthony Palmini as Flint, Gabriel Michael as Mackay, Sarah Matsui Kobe as Eden, Kit Swan as Calder, Melody Muse as Grace, and Stephanie Nemet Parker as the Crone. With additional performances by David Quiqui, Dawn Ursula, Eric Messner, Daniel Yaka, Andrew James Spooner, Chris Stinson, Drew Kopis, James Konacek, Michael John Casey, John Vertulo, Kay Illuvian, Elias Khalil, Jessica Schley, Terrence Aselford, Tyler Herchuk, Steve Wanall, Yasmin Toison, Charlie Albers, Matthew Bassett, Sam Intrader, Ian Putnam, Megan Hasty, and Nanette Savard. Directed and adapted for Graphic Audio by Eric Messner. Dialogue editing and Graphic Audio sound design by Connor McGinley. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zintney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. If you've enjoyed Crave, Book 3, Covet, Part 2, you might also enjoy Enchanted Highlands, Book 1, Wild Scottish Night, by Tricia O'Malley, or Zodiac Academy, Book 1, The Awakening, by Caroline Peckham and Suzanne Valenti. All these titles and many more are now available at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening to hear a sample clip from Married to Magic, Book 1, A Deal with the Elf King, by Elise Kova.
Smaller. Let me see the day. Light winks through the windows as the plants retreat, little by little. All at once, they shudder. I watch as the magic withers, stolen from my grasp. The life within the vines vanishes. They shrivel, turn brittle, black, and then collapse to dust that fades away as smoke. In their wake, the room is a wreck that stinks of roses, and standing in the doorway is a scowling Eldas.
Can I not leave you alone for a day?
This wasn't my fault. My cheeks burn, but I don't know if it's from fever or embarrassment.
Spare me.
It wasn't.
Who else here could have done this?
Eldas stalks over to me.
Some other human queen with the power to manipulate and control life itself? Because for all my life, I was told I was waiting for just one woman. But if I spent my years sequestered and alone for nothing, then please let me know. I'd love to know what options I have.
Sequestered and alone? The words stick out to me, but I know he'd only roll his eyes at best if I tried to ask. A question for Willow, maybe? All this was Harrow's fault. Surprise streaks across his face, chased by anger. He quickly pushes the emotions away, back under that cool and indifferent mask that I've seen him wear more often than not. Harrow was the one who ripped me from my bed, quite literally. I had no interest in being here. Eldas opens his mouth to speak, but I shove my finger in his face, nearly touching his nose. And you know what? I took his goading in my stride. I could handle them having a laugh at my expense. I could even handle their little prank that they decided to pull on me. But when he tried to hold me here against my will, I couldn't handle it. I am so tired of being controlled by men like him and Luke and you. His eyes darken in a way that I dare say is protective? Surely it must be my imagination.
What did he do?
Locked me in here using his wild magic. Eldas looks to the windows. He scowls deeper.
I'll speak with my brother. In the meantime, I'll post Rinnie at your room. At least until Harrow grows bored of you.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.